This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Kusi Chuang and Noah Lim in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Dr. Hamidin Ahmad Abdul Hamid, Research Fellow at Ilham Center, on the latest updates on Malaysia's political landscape. In fact, we've got a poll running on Twitter right now. What do you think about, can Pakatan Harapan overcome the current leadership succession issues? Tell us why or how. Your options include yes, no, don't know, and don't care. And we just put up the poll with 12 votes in. 41% saying yes. No, this vote keeps changing. It's too quick right now. Let's take a look at what's happening in the markets. Let the poll settle down a little bit. Chuang, how did Asian markets close on Friday?
Well, mostly up. The Nikkei was up by 0.6%. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng was up by 0.7%. In China, the Shanghai Comp was up by 1%. And the KLCI also followed suit, up by 0.2%. But Singapore decided to go the other direction, falling by 1.2%.
Yes, a very thorough decision there by them. I think a lot of this came on the back of positive breakthroughs in the U.S., or at least at the time, U.S.-China trade negotiations. China was reportedly planning to accelerate purchases of American farm goods to comply with the Phase 1 trade deal with the U.S. following talks in Hawaii. But it's been a long weekend. Who knows what's happened by now? Noel, how did U.S. markets do on Friday?
Yeah, the good mood didn't carry over to the U.S. markets, which closed in negative territory. So I think there are still many concerns about their U.S. COVID-19 situation. Think, bearing in mind 2.3 million cases, right? And 30,000 new cases on Friday as parts of the country reopened. So the Dow was down 0.8%, S&P 500 down 0.6%, and the Nasdaq remained relatively flat.
Right. And for more on global markets right now, we speak to Stephen Innes, Asia Pacific Market Strategist at Axie Trader. Stephen, are you there on the line with us?
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's been a while since we've had a chat.
Yeah. Lots of holidays.
Lots of holidays. Hope you're doing well. Now, Stephen, the Fed believes that a second virus wave in autumn will lead to unemployment climbing again. Do you hold to the view that jobless rates might rise even as the economy recovers?
It's an interesting dilemma they've got, because the science community is always worried about, especially the northern hemisphere, as the temperatures cool off again, that the virus could reemerge. Certainly, it's going to weigh on investor sentiment if they're scared to come out of their house again. However, we have to also remember that we may not see draconian lockdowns to the degree that we saw during the first wave. I think there was just such a financial downturn and cost that governments are going to be reticent about moving down that road again. However, that's not to say that companies themselves won't close stores. As we saw with Apple over the weekend, or on Friday, I should say, they closed 11 stores in the U.S. I don't think they want to be wearing that scarlet letter, being known as a super spreader store of a virus resurgence. Now, this is a little bit worrisome, because this doesn't fall under the purvey of government lockdown measures. So we have to keep an eye on that. But ultimately, it's whether the consumers feel safe to come out of their house again. That's really what counts. If they don't feel safe, we're not going to have a recovery, because this is going to be a consumer-led recovery, which in turn will continue to weigh on the employment levels.
Yeah, Stephen, staying stateside, U.S. jobless claims, as you just mentioned, and GDP data due Thursday. What are your expectations on that front?
Well, you know, we saw a decline last Thursday in the claims, but it wasn't a large decline. And sort of this is raising questions about the very robust and non-farm payroll report that we had out on May, which really sort of shocked the markets a little bit, because it came back very strong. We have to pay very close attention to this, because this is about as close to a real-time high-frequency input that we're going to get in these markets. It actually bears some attention, because the data doesn't lie, really, because this is numbers coming out. Perhaps we're a little bit delayed in some cases, but really, it's the trend that we're looking for. If we do get a continuation of a broader, more positive trend on the unemployment data over the short term, that's going to be quite positive. But ultimately, we're going to ultimately, Main Street's wall of worry is the job loss that's happening in the U.S., which eventually will become Wall Street's worry. And this is the problem that the markets could be facing down the road, despite the amount of stimulus in the markets right now that is keeping stock markets afloat.
Thursday, GDP numbers will be out. What are your expectations? Are you expecting a sharp drop in the first quarter?
Well, yeah, but I mean, we have to sort of look through this data because, first of all, the breadth of the data, in other words, the breadth of the expectations on the data are so wide you could drive your family truck through there. So it's very difficult to make sense out of, you know, what's going on here. If the top economists can't really come out with a good estimate, I don't think we should be paying too much attention to it simply because the data could be a little bit unreliable. However, as we move forward into the better parts of the summer, I think the data becomes more relevant, especially as we move towards the end of summer when, in theory, most economies will be out of lockdown. So we have to keep that in mind as we analyze current data.
Yeah, Stephen, the WHO obviously ringing some bells of alarm on Friday. Tedros Ghebreyesus is talking about how coronavirus, the biggest daily jump in cases on Friday, 183,000 in number, mostly centering in the Americas, Brazil 50,000, the US somewhere, you know, 10,000 odd short of that. But again, rearing its ugly head. Are you concerned that a second wave, somewhat more material than the first, might occur?
It depends how we interpret it, you know, whether this is an extension of the first or a reemergence of the second. Certainly Beijing, we can probably consider that a secondary wave. Also, the abattoir incident over in Germany, that's probably considered a secondary wave because it was thought those two countries had really, you know, cleared the hurdle, so to speak. But I think U.S. hasn't really cleared that hurdle. And certainly Brazil hasn't because that curve continues to steepen day in, day out. It's a little bit worrisome in more of the emerging market countries, simply because they do not have the facilities, financial nor healthcare, to handle this, and this is going to be a real problem. I feel a bit sorry for the people there because, you know, unlike the more wealthier states and you know that have really strong healthcare programs, there's probably going to be a lot more deaths. So I'm hoping the world unites around this fact and starts to offer up some support to some of the poor countries throughout the world. You know, fingers crossed we get a vaccine by the end of summer. That's the ultimate cure. But, you know, until then, I think the world has to unite on this front and really provide a lot of efforts, both on the healthcare front and also on the financial front.
Yeah, Stephen, on the back of all this concern of a possible second wave in markets, where is the support for crude oil coming from and what would be needed for it to break through $40? Is that if that's even a realistic notion at this point?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting markets. It was hard not to get caught up on Friday's move. I think what we're seeing here is two big trading houses came out and updated their demand perspectives, which was quite healthy. But that's not anything we didn't know. We knew the supply and demand curves were moving in the right direction, supply dropping down simply because of U.S. shale curtailments, along with OPEC's compliance measures, which are quite extreme. But here's what I think. I think it's more to do with OPEC compliance. I think what's happening here, we've got this principle of compensation on the table right now, where countries that haven't been compliant are basically asked to pony up by cutting supply. You know, the most egregious offenders being Iraq and Nigeria, they have to come up and sort of cut supply to compensate for their not cutting in the past. So I think the market is starting to price that in because that was totally unexpected, you know, that they would actually comply with that. So I think we're starting to see that getting priced in a bit. Plus, you know, the supply and demand curve is moving in the right direction. However, you know, this with COVID starting to, you know, come into the equation again, I think we have to be a little bit careful to sort of rein in our optimism a little bit on oil prices because we could, in theory, have another major correction downwards here if the COVID-19 headcount continues to rise alarmingly so that to the degree we're seeing in the Americas.
Yeah, so I think, you know, with borders still being closed, demand for jet fuel wouldn't have recovered yet, right? And that would probably not give that kind of support to oil prices.
Yeah, you know, that's about 10% of the equation, but it's a big 10%. You know, the biggest demand is coming out of consumer use through automobiles and what have you. But this is a huge element. You know, if that stays reticent, I think we're going to have a little bit of a problem. Fortunately, there's signs of travel restrictions easing. But then again, you know, when we start to see pockets of virus pop up all over the planet again, then I don't think people are going to be, or country governments are going to be too quick to drop those travel alerts or travel restrictions. And that's going to be a problem for aviation going forward. So, yeah, that's a very good point. I think that's going to be the next stumbling block for oil prices.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Stephen Innes, Asia Pacific Market Strategist at Axie Trader, essentially highlighting that, could we see Main Street's worries become Wall Street's worries if jobless numbers spike again later on? And two, just again, all this is really contingent on how the COVID-19 numbers in, I think you pointed out, Chuang, in the Americas, how that plays out.
Well, actually, I forgot to mention that Germany's R rates, you know, which is the reinfection rate, has actually spiked to nearly 2.88 to be precise, after the abattoir incident that Stephen Innes was referring to. So it's similar to the outbreak in Beijing. It's obviously related to a market. Beijing was related to imported salmon. In Germany, it's related to meat. So again, the spike is not looking good.
Yeah, and then very quickly, while we're speaking about meat, China has suspended poultry imports from Tyson Food Plants, where hundreds of employees tested positive for COVID-19. All products from the Arkansas plant will be seized by Chinese customs, and the suspension was announced on Sunday and is a U-turn from just a few days before that.
Yeah, I don't think this will be the last, right? I think China is getting very stringent. I think they've looked at Australia as well, slapping some tariffs, and also now in the US and in Canada, they are also asking Canadian exporters to, you know, to impose stricter compliances. So, and this, who knows, might trigger another round of concerns about the trade war.
Yes, and on that note, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be taking a look at the latest from the Malaysian political landscape with Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid, Research Fellow at Ilham Center. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.